Financial technology, or fintech, is one of the fastest growing industries in the world today, with New York, London, Tel Aviv, Edinburgh, Singapore, Moscow, and other major cities all vying for a piece of the action. Welcome to Breaking Banks, the first dedicated radio show that focuses on how this new boom is changing everything, from the way we bank to the very concept of money itself. Now, here's your host, Brett King.
Welcome to Breaking Banks. We're back this week with the coverage of all things fintech, the number one fintech radio show and podcast in the world with 6.5 million listeners in 180 countries. If you've been watching the news this week, you'll see that there's a lot of focus on sustainability right now, and climate-related risk management is becoming a big deal. There's a big report on this right now, which you can read if you go to Finextra. It was covered at the World Conference of Banking Institutes in Abu Dhabi, and this is part of what they call ESG now, Environmental, Social, and Governance Initiatives. When I was down in Australia recently at FinCEA's event, there was a lot of focus on this ESG, so I think climate risk and climate change generally are heating this up. We did see Monzo announce this week that they hit the 3 million mark in terms of users. So congrats to Tom and the team at Monzo. They're making some real progress there. Of course, Monzo and N26 right now are making their entryway into the US markets as well. Before we get further into the news and have some coverage from our week that we spent in Luxembourg recently, I would like to get some feedback on another event that's happening this week, which is Digital Banking Week. And we have our regular on the show, a co-host often, and a regular contributor to the show, Theo Lau, who's joining us all the way from Digital Banking Week. Where are you actually at the moment, Theo?
At the moment, I'm actually on the East Coast.
Okay. So tell us about Digital Banking Week and what's been kicked off today. We're recording this Tuesday in advance of the Thursday show, but tell us what's been happening for Digital Banking Week with MX this week.
Yeah, it's actually really cool. It's the first time that they're doing digital sessions, if you will, events for 3 days. So today is the first of the 3 day where there are, I believe, 24 different people presenting various aspects of what's going on with digital banking. So there are a couple of themes around, for example, data. How do you leverage data to create the proper experience that consumers will be looking for? There's talking about evolution of banking, where previously we're looking at what can we learn from retail versus right now there's a lot more emphasis on behavioral science. Speaking of which, this morning, Professor Dan O'Reilly presented his session, which is always fascinating for people who love to read and who are interested in behavioral economics. I would highly recommend one of his books.
Did he have his full beard on today or his half beard?
He had this half. And he actually explained last week in the FinTech Data Festival, also hosted by MX and Sundance, on why he had his half beard. But he's just an amazing speaker. So he presented this morning. His session was called The Behavioral Economics and Psychology of Money, Fairness, Effort, and Trust. So throughout the sessions, at least, the ones that I listened to and also presented this afternoon, it's a lot about where are we right now with banking and how we have to change, right? It's not a matter of if we will change, it's a matter of we need to change. So how do we go about doing it? Where does data fit in with the whole evolution of banking, and how we can do better for the society? There was also an interesting session, actually, speaking of data. There was a session about storytelling with data. Cool. It's from a professor from Stanford. So that's good as well. There are lots more coming, obviously, your sessions, Jim Maru's sessions, and also my partner in crimes on Thursday. So I would highly encourage listeners to check it out.
Absolutely, and you can do it remotely, and we will send out the link with the Twitter feed as to where you can catch Digital Banking Week. So all the big names are coming out this week. And so you're currently based in Washington, right?
Yes, I am in DC still, although I feel like I live on the plane. But
and so tell us about how you're going with your own podcast, Rhetoric, and what's coming up on that.
It's actually, it's been fun. It's a great learning experience. So we started our show earlier this week. It's been 9 months already we've been running. So we partner with a VC partner over in the UK called Green Shores Capital. And it's about stories with a purpose. That's the main theme of the podcast. So we have finished a season on longevity fintech. We call it Shades of Grey, which is always my favorite topic. How do we leverage fintech innovation for longevity? And right now we're running two consecutive seasons in parallel, one called Red Envelope, which is about fintech development in Asia. So we are talking to a lot of different founders, entrepreneurs, as well as various banking executives on what's going on in Asia, right? In India and China, Southeast Asia, what have you. And in parallel, we're running another show called Judge Me by My Cover, which, because Brad and I both love books. And so you have been on one of our shows as well, as well as our friends, Chris Skinner.
It's your book review.
It's a book review. Yeah. Exactly. And we have some exciting news coming up too in a few weeks.
Wow. We can't wait to hear that. We hope you give us an exclusive, or at least a close to exclusive.
It's going to be a new season focused on something that we all dear and care about. So
very cool.
You will be the first to know.
Absolutely. Well, that's great. And say hello to Brad Limer for us. Theo Lau, thanks for joining us to give me this update on the week of Digital Banking Week and some of the content there.
Thanks for having me.
So back in Luxembourg, and we ran into one of the key architects of fintech for the Luxembourg market, Gail Dennis. He's from Ernst & Young. Heads up the fintech initiative here for EY. And is that a European role, a global role, Gail?
Unfortunately, it's a local role. Hi, Brad, first. It's a local role, but it's a role which is also going beyond fintech. It comes to the fact that Luxembourg has long history in telecom and technology. And also financial institution place. So we have we attack the fintech from a broader technology perspective, putting technology, fintech all together, and I'm leading that in Lux.
So what would you say makes Luxembourg unique from a fintech perspective?
I think it's all about creativity and stability. Creativity, because as I said, technology is there for a while. E-commerce in particular was a big player, Amazon, Rakuten, being around, PayPal. And also stability, because we have a strong, credible regulator. We have a long history also of regulated businesses with banks, insurances, and that makes a big difference to build this ecosystem in fintech.
So you have the European Shenzhen system, is that how you pronounce it? The visa system. So people can come into Luxembourg from other parts of Europe. But are you trying to attract talent from outside of Europe also?
Yeah, so as you said, we have the EU passport. So we're from out of Luxembourg. You can market out of the 28 European countries, soon 27 probably after UK Brexit. Attracting talent is a key matter because we grow quite fast. But as a country, Luxembourg is open internationally. I think just in our company, for example, 60 language spoken, more nationalities even, 200 nationalities in Luxembourg. So we recruit, we attract talents, we attract developers, we attract in particular C-suite executives, IT specialists.
So how long have you been at EY?
19 years.
Okay. So now, you know, EY, because I came from consulting as well as with Deloitte Consulting back in the day. You know, it used to be more about strategy and industry expertise now, but definitely there's a lot more technology focus. So why would you say, or would you say, fintech is a hot area for consultants to be working in these days?
Definitely, fintech. There is two channels. There is the I would say the help we can bring to help fintech startups to grow. Grow is a priority for me for the startups. I mean, getting capital is one thing, but building a story, a success story to the market is very important. Second, it's the automation and digitalization of banks. I mean, financial institutions, we know, see the value chain completely fragmented in the future. They need to reinvent their system architecture. And for that, we need definitely to bring operational consulting in particular. And also, technology play a great role because, for example, we know regulatory reporting is getting very expensive, very complex, and bringing AI in this context, for example, to bring automation in regulatory reporting is key.
Very good. So what would you get most excited about here from a fintech perspective? What do you think, where could Luxembourg end up showing the rest of the world, teaching the rest of the world on fintech?
I think for the moment, the great start of Luxembourg over the last year is definitely payment and e-money. I think all the big players of payments are here. I mean, Amazon, Alipay, PayPal.
So you think interoperability for these systems might come out of Luxembourg?
Yes.
Is that a possibility?
That's a possibility. I think also open banking, I think API around open banking is critical.
It's a link not just between banks, but also the technology players, right?
Yeah, it is that link, and also the borders, national borders will become less important, and I think it will be critical just to get the application and the content.
Okay, and so Luxembourg sort of is like a Switzerland of financial services in some ways.
But we're in Europe.
True. what role is the ECB playing in terms of fintech in Luxembourg?
But ECB, try to support the technology change by building subsidies, contests for startups to get additional fundings, and also to create, a progressive legal environment also to help banks to adopt new technologies. Then being said, there is a long journey, and the ECB role is also to regulate, and it also the players to be creative and push new changes in technologies.
So Gail, here's a question I'd like you to think about. You know, let's say this plays out over the next 10 years. In 10 years' time, what do you think Luxembourg will be like? Will we see a lot more technology companies here? Will we see the banking sector having gone through changes? What do you think it'll be like in 10 years' time?
I think, for me, the technology sector in terms of e-commerce marketplaces will continue to grow. And that's very important because around marketplaces, we have all the payment ecosystem, and around all the marketplaces ecosystem, you have also the futures of open banking services. So definitely, I think the banking area will continue to evolve. I mean, private banking will remain. There will be evolution, of course. There will be a fragmentation of services, new fintechs integrating the bank offerings. But also, it's important that we continue to attract this, marketplace ecosystem.
Good. So we've had a couple of your colleagues on, James Lloyd from EY down in Hong Kong, talking about some of the banks down there coming along. But where can people find more about EY's fintech initiative?
EY Fintech Initiative, of course, website, conferences. I think we are visible. We publish studies. I think we also been. I know James and the team. I work quite a lot also on publications around cryptocurrencies.
Yes.
That's also an area. I think EY has been heavily present and early. Adopters of cryptocurrencies.
Fantastic. Merci. Thanks for coming on the show today.
Thank you very much, Brett.
And I am in Luxembourg for the ICT Spring, and part of that we have the fintech event here. But I'm caught up with my old friend Nasser Zabiri. Is that how I say it?
Yeah.
You've been on the podcast a while ago, right?
Yeah, it was a good 3-4 years ago, I think, Brett.
Luxembourg's quite interesting. You've got a population of about 700,000, but about 300,000 people commute into Luxembourg every day for work. But the dominant industry is financial services. So you really lead Loft here, which is, I'll get you to talk about that initiative. But with the startup scene in fintech in particular here, what does it look like? And given that it's a smaller market but part of Europe, how does that sort of influence the foundation of the fintech scene here?
Yeah, well, thank you for having me on the broadcast, Brett. The startup scene is genuinely very vibrant. I mean, the setup of the Loft actually originally was the mission of the Minister of Finance, Pierre Gramegna, who's also our chairman, in that he didn't feel anything was happening here 4 or 5 5 years ago. And given the importance of the financial services sector accounting for about 30% of GDP, he felt something should be happening. That's when I sort of walked in. I came to Luxembourg to actually set up a bank here, was helping out the government and advising them, and then they were very persuasive in getting me to run the initiative.
So Loft is actually spelled LH, which LHOF.
Yeah, it's all about
Luxembourg House.
Yeah, it's all about finding short acronyms and URLs, right?
So, what's Luxembourg House and how's that fit into the schema?
Well, it's Luxembourg House of Financial Technology. The Loft is basically a true public-private, not-for-profit foundation. So one of the things which I marvel at in Luxembourg is the fact that government and private sector really do work hand-in-hand to make things happen. As I said, the minister himself is our chairman and a very proactive one. In terms of promoting fintech, takes a lot of pride, I think, in the way the sector has grown in Luxembourg, and therefore, arguably, our best salesperson on an international scene. And given the, as I said, the global importance of Luxembourg as a financial services center, on an international stage, it's not something that's ignored. And I get some of the strangest phone calls that I doubt I would ever have gotten anywhere else. You know, CTO from the OECD phones me up. I sit on the IMF steering committee with Christine Lagarde now. These are not things that you would normally get in, say, bigger centers, but because of the collaboration here between public and private sector, they sort of work in alignment to try and push things forward. And that's really why the fintech sector has grown quite rapidly here, because we have a lot of agility to be able to get things done and a lot of backing and collaboration from all sectors.
So tell me about some of the fintechs that are emerging here that you find interesting, because you did have an award ceremony last night. And
yeah.
But what would you say, give me examples of the unique Luxembourg flavor of fintechs?
Well, what we've tried to focus on generally is it's not so much about acquiring and building fintech firms. It's more about the B2B and the collaboration between the traditional industry and fintech firms and how that really is the future of finance. So what we look for really is solutions, and fintech obviously is big part of that. We also obviously help the banks with their own internal digitalization strategy. So a lot of the fintech here is really around providing solutions to that industry that exists, and obviously the core industry here is the fund management one, second largest in the world after the US, which is quite astounding for a country of 600,000 people. So there where we see a lot of the demand from the finance industry is really around RegTech. I think there's no one is really surprised that the banks and financial institutions are not in good shape at the moment. And we love to talk about all the front office and customer orientated technologies. But what we see really is that all these organizations are really looking at cost saving measures in the back end.
Well, ROE is plummeting.
Exactly.
Right? And there's no, if you look at operators like Ant Financial in China, you know, it's a very, very different business model. So are you of the school of thought that regulators like banks will also have to become technology players?
Yes, and again, we work with the regulator here quite closely. As I said, it's part of the collaboration we have. I sit on their steering committee here. What's somewhat unique and I think a good sign in Luxembourg from a regulatory perspective is that the head of the regulator, Claude Marx, is from the private sector in the majority, is very pro-innovation and technology. It's not a fast process because we obviously have the ECB and EU framework on top, and we can talk about how I think personally they are ruining the European banking industry as a whole. But within that framework, a lot is being done. We were the first jurisdiction to license Bitcoin exchanges a few years ago with Bitflyer and Bitstamp. We've also recently passed a blockchain law to give certainty to settlement of securities on the blockchain, which sounds small but is actually quite critical to enable traditional institutions to participate participate in that world, it gives them more of a free rein to access it. So the regulator here is working hard. We've also been talking about looking at using AI in terms of regulatory reporting, which will help both sides, the regulator in terms of processing a lot of the work that they're doing. I mean, here they're processing under the fund management industry with the PRIPS initiative. They're processing like 300,000 kids documents a year. That's just physically not really possible and a huge cost. So AI can come in there to help out on the regulatory side. So SupTech, I think, yeah, it's called SupTech. Yeah, that's the one. But also then help the organizations, the financial institutions, which, as you say, the ROE is plummeting. I mean, a lot of the institutions here will quote that their overheads is 30-40% is just on compliance and regulation.
Right. And so that sort of supervisory tech, the reg tech space, obviously growing very rapidly. We've got Henry Aslani and comes on the show regularly to talk about this stuff with us, and Joanne Barefoot, who I worked with on Bank 4.0, helped me write the chapter on RegTech. But how do you think Luxembourg compares with the likes of, say, Singapore or Hong Kong in terms of their regulatory readiness to evolve?
Well, we need to remember Singapore's regulator works in isolation for Singapore. The MAS has considerably more scope and power, acting as a regulator, as an investor, as a promotional agent, which is going far beyond the scope of any EU regulator, right? I mean, we just look at Singapore FinTech Festival, where they're putting in 12 million to promote that. You wouldn't have any European regulator have even that scope of possibility to do something like that. So yeah, they can move much faster, as in Dubai you see the same happening. As I say here, there are huge positives under sort of broader EC collaboration, but there is a lot of issues, and now particularly with Brexit, where typically what we would have seen at the negotiation table at a macro supervisory level of London, Dublin and Luxembourg as the three core international centres standing firm together in alignment, London is no longer there, and what you now have is Dublin, Luxembourg versus France, which we can debate long and hard whether that's a good position or not.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. All right, so if people want to find out more about Luxembourg, particularly the initiative around the loft, where can they go?
Well, there's our website, loft.com. We're very active on social media. Yes, LHOFT, Luxembourg House of Financial Technology. We're very active on Twitter, same loft as well. Instagram, Facebook. Likewise with the other organizations, Luxembourg for Finance, which is a promotional agency for Luxembourg's financial services industry, have many brochures, magazines, etc., which give an overview of the market and what's going on here, the size and scope and where a lot of the focus is, with interviews with a lot of the actors. We have Rakuten Bank here, Amazon, eBay, and Financial is moving here as well. So clearly there is something quite special.
So Ant just got a banking license, of course, in Hong Kong.
Yeah.
So that enables them now to enter Europe in an entirely different way, doesn't it?
Absolutely, yes.
It's going to be pretty interesting.
It is. Luxembourg has a very, very special relationship with China. The seven largest Chinese banks all have their headquarters here for Europe. And as I say, Ant Financial is moving their European headquarters here in the wake of Brexit. We have Deep Blue Technologies, one of the biggest AI companies. So a lot of Chinese flow coming in. The stock exchange works very closely with China as well. So that's a very good channel for Lux.
Great.
And great exposure in terms of, I mean, China's technology is, as you say, way, way ahead of anything we see in Europe.
Well, Nasser, it's a great pleasure to see you again, and thanks for joining us on Breaking Banks today from Luxembourg.
No, thank you very much for having me, Brett.
All right, so joining us from all the way from Australia is our friends at Zinger. We have joining us the CEO and founder of Zinger, one of the leading challenger banks down in the Australian market, and Camilla, what's your official role? Chief Marketing Officer?
That's right.
Okay. You guys, I understand, you guys have obviously had your provisional license for a while, and been starting to ramp up activity, but I understand you guys have got some news for us. What's the big news?
Yes, we do. I'm very happy to announce that Zinder is now a fully licensed bank. Our first bank accounts hit the streets pretty shortly, like within 24, 48 hours.
Wow. So Eric, how does that differentiate what's already been happening in terms of Zinder's growth and your onboarding of customers and so forth? What does it mean in the immediate term?
Yeah, I guess in the immediate term, it means that at long last, we can finally offer Australians a full service bank account that gives them obviously a trading account, a current account rather, and also a stash or somewhere to put their savings. And we will be
so full DDA instead of like a prepaid rail sort of thing.
Absolutely right. And we'll be the first independent Australian bank to market.
Oh, the first? Wow.
Yeah, we've got
first independent. So that's pretty cool, particularly digital pure play, right?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, there's a couple of other sort of pretend neo banks down here at the moment, but they're all owned by existing banks, just pretending to be new banks. There's only two real neo banks that are independent, and we're the first ones to market.
Wow, that's a real achievement. So, you know, in terms of this. This in your growth plan, is this coming on time with your plans for growth? Is it earlier than you expected? Has the regulatory process been a tough one? What can you tell us about the context of this decision in terms of Zinder's roadmap?
Yeah, look, I mean, the regulatory process has been tough. There's no question at all about that. It's probably come about 2 months later than we'd expected in terms of the timing of the roadmap. But, you know, to give our regulator their due, they have pulled our business apart and checked everything and rechecked it and modelled everything, as they should. You know, it should be a hard process. And I'm very, very proud that we've come out the other end of that in really good shape. And the other thing to remember, of course, is Zinder's the first fully in-the-cloud neobank in Australia. So, you know, again, that's going to take some time for the regulator to look through and make sure it's safe.
That's fantastic. Well, all right. So let's play a little bit of a scenario or gaming on this front. Obviously, you guys are, you've done some fundraising recently and so forth, and you've had some good activity there. But if we were to play this out based on this decision, where do you think this is going to put you in the next 5 or 10 years? And what does that mean for the Australian market in general?
Oh, that's a good question. So, look, Zinder has always been designed to be for purpose and for profit and to really start to try and smash the oligopoly here in Australia. So we see ourselves certainly over the next 3 or 4 years, you know, really starting to not only offer the good sort of traditional banking products, but offer them in really new, innovative ways, faster, cheaper, just new ways to manage your money that actually help Australians get out of debt, make the most out of their money. And then we're going to start looking at some other interesting stuff. You know, we'll look at providing a marketplace for things like insurance and superannuation. We're going to take a look at some crypto. I mean, who knows what we'll do there? We're going to have a look at that and see if we can find a way to really add some value to our customers and make their lives a bit better. You know, and we absolutely...
Wow, you're game mentioning the crypto word. Well, coming off the back of a new
loss. Long way to go yet, but, you know, we think there's... We think there's definitely some interesting stuff in there, and certainly, you know, the blockchain and crypto, it's an area of technology you just can't ignore these days. It's absolutely core and absolutely important.
Yes, well, with the Chinese government, of course, announcing their initiatives to create a digital version of the RMB, it's certainly timely. Well, this is great news. Congratulations to both of you, Eric and Camilla. And for those that are listening to the show somewhere else around the world that aren't familiar with Zinder, where can they find out a bit more about all these happenings?
You can go to zinder.com.
Fantastic. Well, congratulations once again and continued success.
Thanks so much, Brett. Cheers.
Well, that was exciting news from Zinder down in Australia with their full banking license. A lot of good stuff going on in the fintech space down there. Coming up after the break, Jason Hendricks is going to be interviewing Sue Woodward from Total Marketing Expert. We'll be right back after this short break.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
This week's Breaking Banks podcast is brought to you by Privacy.com.
Privacy.com lets you buy stuff online using a virtual credit card number instead of your real credit card. This protects your identity, protects you from fraud, theft of your bank information, and stuff like this on the internet. Recently, I was able to use privacy.com for an online purchase of some movie memorabilia from one of my favorite TV shows, Fringe. But this was a site I really wasn't familiar with. I wasn't sure how they were going to handle my credit card information. I was a little bit uncertain, so I was able to use privacy.com to complete my transaction and protect my information. You don't have to worry about canceling subscriptions or trials if you use one of these temporary credit card numbers. You can set spending limits for yourself for each of these card numbers you set up or collectively. You don't have to worry about your card information getting hacked. That's the real beauty of this. So head to privacy.com/fintech. That is privacy.com, privacy.com/fintech, FINTECH, obviously. And as a special treat for Breaking Banks listeners, new customers signing up today will automatically get $5 to spend on your first purchase. Yep, that's free money to use on any online purchase where you use privacy.com. So check it out, privacy.com/fintech, and sign up today.
Become our friend on Facebook. Post your thoughts about our shows and network on our timeline. Visit facebook.com/Voice America.
Hey guys, I'm really excited to tell you about a new business that's sponsoring the Breaking Banks podcast. It's called Zapier. Now, growing a business is tough, especially when you're dealing with lots of different business apps, moving data back and forward from different systems. That's where Zapier can help. So they connect apps and automate workflows. So you could call it a bit of AI there, robotic process automation, but it does it by coordinating different apps. So take your best apps like your video call software, your email apps, CRM, your calendar app, or popular apps you use every day like Slack, Salesforce, GitHub, NetSuite, even PayPal or Stripe, and Zapier can pull all the data together from those web-based apps. It's the easiest way to automate your work. It connects all your different business software together and handles that automation, that data flow between those different apps for you. So you don't need to waste time on tasks that instinctively should be automated, because that's exactly what Zapier was built to do. So go and check it out to our special link, zapier.com/fintech. Connect the apps you use the most and let Zapier take it from there. It lets you instantly engage with your leads, send them to a CRM or spreadsheet, and notify different people in your team, they can act on it. That's just scratching the surface of the capabilities. There's more than 4.5 million people that are saving an average of 40 hours per month using Zapier's tech. So check it out right now through to November, try Zapier for free by going to our special link, zapier.com/fintech. That's zapier.com/fintech for your free 14-day trial. Emphasis on the free. zapier.com/fintech.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Breaking Banks, featuring your host, Brett King. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or join the conversation on Twitter by using the hashtag Breaking Banks. Now, back to the program.
And we're back. Welcome back to Breaking Banks. I'm Brett King, your host. Earlier in the week, Jason Henricks was able to catch up with Sue Woodward, the Chief Customer Officer at Total Expert, a mortgage industry expert organization. She, in addition to having a successful financial radio program and making guest appearances on CNBC, Sue has been awarded numerous industry honors, including the Most Powerful Woman in Mortgage Banking, the MPA Hot 100, the Housing Wire Vanguard Award, and other things. So as a Chief Customer Officer, Officer. She is focused on helping customers achieve productivity and long-term success. Let's hear what her and Jason had to talk about.
Here with Sue Woodard, Chief Customer Officer at Total Expert, a marketing operating system focused on financial services, specifically banking and mortgage, and all of the issues related to compliance and risk management that go with that. Sue, welcome to Breaking Banks. And I'd love if you could start, you know, tell us what exactly is a marketing operating system?
Yeah, well, a marketing operating system is actually a term we coined, but it really is something that it empowers that personalized, automated marketing and engagement at scale. So we're looking to centralize in the marketing operating system the marketing and sales activity in one platform and then position banks to deliver that right message, right time, to the right person, through the right channel to create those customers for life.
So a whole host of questions come out of that would be really helpful to understand. So why does it need to be specialized versus, you know, there are lots of platforms out there from a marketing and automation that reach a broader industry. What do you think is different in the financial service world?
Well, there's a couple of different things. And one thing I think that's pretty cool is that I think we're seeing right now in financial services and banking such a big drive towards paying a lot of attention to the customer experience. And the reason why this is so important and important to have a specialized solution for financial services and banking is what we hear from the people that we talk to is that banks have just mountains of data, but it's completely segmented, siloed. We talk to places that have their data and their information in, you know, 4, 5, 6 different systems. And so it's almost have been impossible for them to really deliver this great customer experience that people want to, where that customer feels like they're seen and known because the data is so disparate and so disconnected.
So how are you solving that challenge? Because, I mean, this is something almost every banker we have on the show or every tech company that wants to partner with a bank complains about is the combination of the data is siloed, the data is actually very poor, it's dirty data, and then actually getting it out and then back in is really hard. How have you solved that problem?
Well, again, what we're looking to do is really get everything centralized in terms of the marketing and sales activity in one platform. You're always going to have a lot of different data in a lot of different, in different systems in a banking environment. But I think when you're able to pull the correct data that allows you to really know that customer and know what's happening in their life and have that in one single platform, which is what we do, that's where we're seeing this be incredibly powerful and really starting to ring the bell for the companies that we're talking to. I think we all know, you know, it's interesting when we think about, you know, people listening are probably part of, you know, financial institutions, part of banks, but we're all consumers too, right? We all probably have bank accounts, and think about the situations and kind of the experience we all have as consumers being part of a bank. Very often we're getting pieces of marketing that completely don't pertain to, it feels like you don't even know me. Like I've given you all this financial information, all this data, you don't even know me. And that's a bad experience for a customer.
Don't get me started on that one. There's nothing worse than I just took a mortgage out with you and now you're offering me a mortgage. It's like, why did I go through all of this painful paperwork only to have you tell me that I should come join you and it'll be a pleasant experience? I'm remembering how bad it was.
Exactly. And you know what? You know, I recently had this experience myself. My bank shall go unnamed. But I had an experience where I've been banking with the same company for 20 some years, and there's all kinds of data points that should tell them I'm getting ready to buy a house, right? Even to the point where I called and said, hey, I want to pay off my home equity. You know, nobody asked me. And then I got a phone call after that. I'm thinking, this is it. Nope. It was, you know, something completely unrelated. Then I get something in the mail, completely unrelated. Like nobody picked up on the fact that every single thing, in fact, me practically calling them and telling them, hey, raising my hand, I'm a candidate for something. And they just can't put those pieces together. And it's a bad experience. And, you know, go ahead.
A bad experience, but they're also now catching you at the worst possible time where you're already shopping for other solutions versus they should have owned
right
you from the outset.
Right. And the bank comes into play with people. This is the interesting thing. People go to their bank traditionally when something is happening in their life, right? I mean, of course, we all have the day in, day out. We're doing our banking, you know, paying our bills, you know, our, you know, payments come out of it. But when you need your bank is when something is happening, right? You're getting married, you're buying a house, you're getting divorced, you have a kid, you have, college expenses. You know, it's like life experiences. Life is happening for people. And that's when you want that bank to be there for you. And you need to feel like they know you. And that's just not what's happening for people, you know, right now. And that's what we're trying to change.
I'll be honest, the only time I actually go into the branch is our dog likes, she knows which branches have good treats and which don't, and so she actually picks the path, and that's why we go into the branch. But you're right, in theory, the reason I engage with my bank is almost always, or when I deeply engage, is because I need something. So what are right. the kinds of things they could and should know where they can leverage the power of Total Expert? Like, give us some use cases where some of your customers have been able to really leverage this.
Right. Well, what we're seeing is happening is, say, for example, somebody, is opening a new account, I think is just a great example. Or even let's just talk about just on the mortgage side of things. I think that's an interesting entree. You know, so many banks and financial institutions are doing mortgage. When somebody does a mortgage loan, they're providing more information to you than any other financial professional ever gains. You know where they work, how much money they make, how many kids they have, the age of those kids, you know where they spend money, you know if they save money. You're learning all of these things. And what we see with our banking customers is when they look at those mortgage departments, they're doing absolutely nothing with that data. They're showing we've got all these accounts at different institutions, but nobody's asking me the question of would it make sense for you to get those accounts consolidated with us. You can see on their credit report, I've got all these debts that are out there somewhere, but nobody's saying to them, hey, I see that, you know, you've got a car loan out there at, you know, 9%, you know, is that something you may want to talk to us about? Or could we get some things consolidated for you? It's literally just not happening. And it's to the point where, you know, from, you know, in talking with our customers, they say it's almost offensive, you know, from the consumer standpoint, when you have all this information, but yet the bank is pretending that they don't even know these things because it's in these disparate systems. So what we're seeing happening is when you get that communication started and that data starts flowing across these siloed departments, you are able to, you know, start making right recommendations that feels really good to the customer, where you're able to say, hey, we want you to be a part of our family here at this bank. You know, you're going through this experience right now, but man, we can see some opportunities that we can help you even, you know, do better on these things and accomplish these goals. You've talked about you want to, you know, send your kids to college. Let's talk about how we can help you make that happen right here at the bank. We're going to be here for you. And I think the key is doing it digitally. It's finding those digital cues, you know, the data that's out there, seeing those digital cues, aggregating that data, and being able to, you know, create a journey for that customer that based on what they're doing, how they're interacting with your content, what they're grabbing onto, trigger something else to happen. But again, it's the right thing at the right time. It's not these messages, to your point earlier, that are completely disjointed to who that customer is and what they're looking for.
Well, the number of times that I get my Amex special offers just for me, and I look at this and I'm like, you think these offers are just for me? What do you think of me that I would be interested in this offer?
Exactly.
What it looks like on the bank side. Do you present it as a dashboard or reports? How are you breaking down? Because it isn't just the data that's siloed. The banks themselves are pretty siloed.
Yeah, I think that's true. And so what we're doing is we're going in and it really is, that's part of it, is really talking to all the different constituents across the bank. And it is centralizing that sales and marketing activity. And that happens, you know, in different places, but generally you do have a centralized marketing operation. That's where we're seeing the most power here, is where you do have a dashboard that serves these other departments across the bank, where you're able to put journeys in place that when this trigger happens and it's happening over on the deposit side, it's kind of floating something up that's going to let somebody on the wealth side know, hey, this is somebody that you may want to get in touch with. So it's a matter of, again, putting that sales and marketing activity in one platform so that it can work across those silos and across those departments in the bank. And yeah, we generally see that in the marketing department running that from the enterprise level.
Where do you think the greatest opportunity is for banks to make gains in their approach to marketing? Because let's face it, it isn't just the bank marketing, but we in financial services in general are rarely on the cutting edge. I mean, we're still catching up to technologies digitally, you know, that have been mainstream for far too long.
Right.
One of my favorite rants from one of the banks we work with recently was his compliance department saying, why do I have to validate that they can open a PDF before they can do e-statements with us anymore? In today's day and age, everyone can handle a PDF. If they're on a modern browser, which is the only thing we should learn,
you're
asking the wrong question. So I'm curious from your point of view, what are the technologies that banks, not even necessarily the technologies, what are the practices that you would say, you know, you should consider these five things as where if you're not doing these, this is where you start?
Yeah. Well, a couple of things is I think, you know, you made such a good point is people acknowledging where they're at currently and taking a really good hard look at some of these old processes that don't even make sense anymore, right? So, you know, I look back to, you know, you look back to 2008 when a lot of really cool technology was, you know, starting to advance over the last 10 years. But hey, in banking, mortgage, financial services, we were just fighting for our lives, right? The world was in on this unbelievable meltdown and sea change. And so we are behind, to your point. So I think the first thing is coming out of that era, coming out of 2008, a lot of things came in place that I think either came in place or never got changed that were really, really old school. So if you start to look about going forward, number one is, you know, admitting you may have a problem, right? Looking at what are you doing as a bank? What kind of customer journey really are you providing? And every single interaction, you know, we find every single interaction that a customer has with their bank or their financial institution, it either builds trust or erodes trust, right? You're going to have that feeling every single time you have an interaction, and up to like 65% of people say that they cut ties with their brand after a bad experience. So number one, it's saying we have a problem. Number two, it's saying this problem is going to cost us a lot of money. So then going forward from that, the very best practice that we've seen that's working is to find a way to centralize those marketing and sales activities in one place. That's the only way that your organization gets a really clear view of the customer and how you're engaging with them. Then I really encourage people to look at what is that customer experience? What is that journey? I mean, again, I think about the places I bank, and I bet everybody listening to this call, if you're, you know, working in financial services, bet you have an account at the place you work. So how are you being treated as a consumer? Think about what's your consumer experience and really starting to walk through that. What does that journey look like? And starting to say, what are the triggers? What do we know about these people? And what kind of actions are they taking that tell us how do we start to engage with them from a digital fashion, right? You know, this is the beauty of technologies. It's this combination of high touch, high tech, but it's really teeing up the opportunity for high touch. It's where does that person want to interact with you? Where do they have a need? And how can you make sure that it doesn't even cross their mind to go somewhere else because you have built the trust. They feel like you know them. It's happened through technology so that when they do reach out that hand, whether it's a digital hand or actually, you know, stopping in a branch or something like that, that you're actually the institution that's there to help them with that next phase in their life and provide that product and service that matches up to what they need in their life and where they're at in their own journey.
But you forget, we don't have a retention problem in banking because we make it so painful to actually move your financial life that you, by the time you have gotten through the process of opening a new account and the process of moving everything over, you've quickly forgotten about just how bad that last experience was and you're perfectly willing to stay put.
Right.
And I'm curious.
Not as hard as it used to be, though. You know, I mean, you think about it. I have a millennial child. I will tell you that. And it's very interesting to me to pay attention to how they operate, right? Because they tend to be much less loyal in that way. They will go to where is providing them a great experience. And it's not as hard as it used to be for them to make those shifts. So I find that interesting.
Do they really value the experience or are they looking for more value? What really drives? That's something we debate frequently here, that are millennials actually that different? They just express it in slightly different ways. What would you say?
You know, what I would say just, you know, from my own experience, and again, I have my own little laboratory of millennial because I, you know, get to watch my daughter and her friends and how they operate with the world, which is a little different. You know, one of the interesting things is, you know, they care a lot about what the brand stands for. You know, that's a whole other podcast, yep. Of course, but, you know, they really actually care about that, what the brand stands for and having a connection with that brand. But the digital experience for them certainly is table stakes. But they are more likely in a lot of processes that when they're doing something big, like getting a mortgage, they want to reach out their hand and actually know that a person is there way more than somebody in my demographic, because I've already done this like 6 times. I don't necessarily have to talk to a person as much, but they do. And so I do actually think, you know, when they look at that, and that's what builds loyalty, is knowing that they've got that that one institution, that person that they know that is there when they do want to reach out that hand, combined with a great brand and a great customer experience. I think that really matters to them.
Well, perhaps the most important question of the day, which sends the better brand signal, having the free bank branded pen or the pen chained to the counter so you know that your bank is being responsible with its money and you have a working one there?
Yes. Boy, that is a question for the ages. But I'm gonna go with the pen I can actually put in my bag and take with me. But
so your pen thief.
It's a hot debate. You know, I'm a pen thief. Yeah, I got a pocket full. So
that's fair.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much for joining us today. If people want to learn more specifically about how Total Expert has been deployed in other places, do you have case studies or places that people can read about some of the things you've done?
Yes, we've got tons of goodies at totalexpert.com. We have an awesome blog. In fact, we'll probably be blogging a little bit about this particular podcast itself, but we've just got tons of great experience, great stories from our customers, great case studies, and just a lot of really cool information there that if people are interested in learning more and even chatting with any of us, including myself. Yeah, just totalexpert.com. We would love to talk to any of the folks listening on today.
Thanks, Sue, and thanks for taking time out of your busy day to chat with us today.
All right. Thank you, Jason. Take care, everybody.
And that's it for Breaking Banks this week. Thank you very much for joining us again, the number one global fintech podcast and radio show in the world. It's incredible. Every time I say that, it's amazing. But it only happens through your support and the support of our sponsors. If you want to know how you can support us, the best way is go online right now. If you're downloading this from iTunes or something like that, give us a 5-star rating. Every little bit helps. And don't forget to give us a shout out online at Breaking Banks One for our Twitter feed. You can contact us on Facebook, on Insta, at Breaking Banks. But just, you know, generally talk about it with your friends. Tell them all about the show. That's what helps us get those listeners and stay at the top, at number one. Really appreciate it. Thanks for joining us again this week. Don't forget, you can go to provoke.fm and check out our other podcasts, including our brand new Finovate podcast that we're producing for the team over there. And we're really happy to have you here. We'll see you again on Breaking Banks next week. Bye.
You've been listening to Breaking Banks with host Brett King. Please be sure to join us again next Thursday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time, for more of the latest in fintech news.